from 90.7 WFAE. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The need for affordable housing is not a new problem in this country, but it is a growing one as more and more working people are finding it increasingly difficult to locate a place to live that doesn't consume their income. The federal government provides subsidies to make housing more affordable. Financial assistance is provided for homeowners through the mortgage interest tax deduction and for lower-income households through direct housing assistance, but even that is not enough. So non-governmental agencies are also involved. Locally, one of those agencies is Community Link, which began in Charlotte in 1929 to help transients and others as part of the National Travelers Aid Society. It was the beginning of the Great Depression, and the need was substantial. Today, Community Link marshals community resources to provide effective, individualized, long-term services to break the cycle of poverty among individuals and families. The president and CEO of that organization is Floyd Davis, who joins us for the hour in our studio. Welcome back to the program. Good to see you again.
Good seeing you, Mike. Thank you.
Alan Adler is also here. He is the producer of an event that's coming up next week, as a matter of fact, the Community Link Signature Breakfast on May 16th, and responsible for bringing our next guest to town. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Mike.
And joining us from the studios of Texas Public Radio is a man whose name is familiar to most of our listeners. He'll be coming, as I said, to Charlotte next Friday to speak at a fundraising breakfast for Community Link. Henry Cisneros is the former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development in the Clinton administration, a four-term mayor of San Antonio. Mr. Cisneros took over a problem-plagued federal bureaucracy in 1993 and chose to make alleviating the problem of homelessness a key priority. He has since gone on to become founder and chairman of CityView, which provides financing to housing developers. The company has invested more than $700 million to build homes for working families, partnering with home builders and developers in more than 30 communities across 12 states. Mr. Cisneros, welcome to the program. Nice to have you with us.
Mike, thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to hear Floyd and Alan from a distance, and I look forward to seeing everybody next week.
Well, we can all hear each other. That's good. We're on the right road here. First of all,
the miracle of modern technology.
Exactly right. First of all,
I'm sitting in a studio in San Antonio. We're having an intimate conversation.
Yeah. I hope you're having coffee and bagels as we are here.
Tea and a coffee roll.
Okay. We're having nothing.
Well, this is NPR, right?
That's exactly right. So, first of all, someone define for me the term affordable housing. What does that mean? Mr. Davis?
Okay, what that means, to put it in perspective and help you understand and our listeners understand, today here in the Charlotte area, a person needs to be earning $14.23 an hour to afford a two-bedroom unit, spending 30% of gross income on housing. And here in our market, or in our region, 35% of the jobs in our regions pay less than $13
What kind of jobs are we talking about?
We're talking about jobs in the service sector of our economy.
Such as?
Such as people who prepare our meals in the restaurants, people who take care of our kids, people who take care of us when we're sick,
So hospital workers?
Hospital workers.
Would you include police and fire people in
that? You would include police and fire people in that, as well as beginning teachers.
Wow.
And so
these are not deadbeats. These are people who serve society.
Right. These are people who work every day. And the problem is the gap between what they're earning and the cost of housing.
This is pervasive across the country, is it not, Mr. Cisneros?
The problem is pervasive. There's no question about it. Despite the difficulties in the housing market today that some would suggest have brought prices down and made housing more accessible, in fact, there is not one single market in the United States today where a family earning about the minimum wage can afford the fair market rent on a two-bedroom apartment. It doesn't exist. And there's still great difficulties in getting working families into home ownership. As a national definition, the way you define what is, quote, affordable housing, it is what a family earning the area median income, or 80% of the area median income, can afford. So generally speaking, when we talk about affordable housing, it is below that 80% level. 80% of what a family earning 80% of the area median income could afford. So generally speaking, it's 60% or 50%. you know, very low income is 30%. Very, very low income is 15% of the very of the area median income. There we're talking nearly homeless conditions. But that gives you a feel for how nationally we calibrate what is called, you know, affordable housing.
Are we witnessing an increase in this since the time you were Housing and Urban Development Secretary, or since the time you were the mayor of San Antonio? Has the need increased? Have the number of people in this category increased?
I think so, although I think there's been some stabilization in recent years. Thankfully, several administrations now have made a priority of dealing with homelessness, and several have pushed hard to, you know, make more rental housing available through what's called low-income housing tax credits and public housing vouchers and other strategies. And the homeownership rate reached an all-time national high a couple of years ago. It's now dropped a little bit. But still, in America today, on any given night, there are 800,000 human beings, 800,000 of our fellow citizens, who are homeless, who are sleeping on a sidewalk or a park or a subway grate or finding them their way into some kind of makeshift shelter. 800,000. And that number of people moves over the course of the year. It's not the same people. Yeah. Some come in of homelessness, others find a permanent shelter. So over the course of the year, the number is 3.5 million Americans. That would be a major metropolitan area in the country who find themselves homeless at least for a period of time.
Talk to me about that population in Charlotte, Floyd Davis, because a lot of people who see what appear to be homeless people on the street think that they are people who are having mental problems, or people who are alcoholics, or people who have a drug problem and can't keep a job and therefore can't have affordable housing, and so they depend on the largesse of others and on the largesse of the community for shelter at night and perhaps food during the day, etc. And evidently, that's part of the problem, but that's not the whole problem.
No, it's not. That's a very small part of the problem. The majority of the homeless people in our community and in other communities around the country are people who are working, but it's the they cannot afford housing, or they have had an event in their lives that have just disrupted their financial picture and make it impossible for them to continue to afford housing. Mm-hmm. But the people you see on the street are a very, very small portion of the homeless population. And the numbers here in our community, in the city of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County, on any given day, there are about 5,000 people who are homeless. And our shelters, as you have read in the newspaper, are full to capacity, and we're doing everything we can with the resources and the agencies that are involved here in the Homeless Services Network to help move as many of those people back into housing as possible.
They say that sometimes someone else's misfortune is another person's opportunity. With the subprime crisis that we're experiencing and foreclosures that are happening all across the country and the declining value of home prices across the country, might this be the silver lining in this dark cloud, that perhaps housing will become more affordable for some of the people in this part of the population?
Yes, I would agree with that. Also, I would say that one of the things we've seen at Community Link over the last 6 months, we've had a continued steady stream of people coming to our program for homeownership education and counseling, and going through our program and receiving homeownership education counseling. They qualify if they purchase within the city of Charlotte in designated neighborhoods, and there are about 90 of those. They qualify for down payment and closing cost assistance, which eliminates the barrier for many people becoming homeowners. And then we can get them into housing, and their mortgages are affordable. Yeah. Their mortgages are, in many cases, are equivalent to what they were paying for in rent.
I want to get your take on this, Mr. Cisneros, because I know that
Mike, I think I agree with Floyd that at for the entry-level homeowner, people seeking to become homeowners, there may be a silver lining in the present circumstance in that prices have come down. It's going to be a while before they get back up to the levels that they were. And there is some product available because of foreclosure, which is a sad way to make housing available,
sure,
because somebody has lost. Somebody's out of a house, and somebody is hurting very badly. But I would say at the level of People who are seeking rentals, the world hasn't changed very much because of this housing situation. In fact, there's greater pressure on rentals as people are not able to become homeowners. They have to stay in a rental unit longer. The stock becomes more constrained. There are fewer vacancies. Prices rise some. And it becomes more difficult for people who are trying to be renters. Also, public housing programs have not increased. So there is no increased volume or number of units of assisted housing available. And let me just say one quick word with respect to the homeless. Floyd did a good job of describing who the homeless are, and so did you, some with mental addictions and some with alcohol addictions and drug problems and AIDS and a lot of things. But the fastest growing segment of the homeless today are women with children. Simple statement of fact. The fastest growing segment of the homeless is women in this housing market who are put out of their homes or have domestic issues or have lost a job, single mothers with children. And homeless shelters are no place for children to live. And so the answer is to create more subsidized units at the price that people who are nearly destitute can live. In fact, today in the homeless field, a new strategy has come forward called Housing First. The idea is let's get people into housing and deal with that multitude of problems that they have. And it's working very well. I mean, in cities like Charlotte, particularly Columbus, Ohio, I know well, and others, this strategy of let's provide some housing units to get people into, we will deal with their with the fact that the mother with children has complexities of training or education, schooling. We'll deal with the issues related to a sickness and a regimen of medicines that people may need, but we got to have them stabilized in housing.
This is ringing a bell to me. Did we talk about this, Mr. Davis, the last time you were here, or was it with somebody else on this program? Because I think somebody's doing that here.
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's a strategy that the Homeless Services Network is employing here in Charlotte. And it's also a strategy that we're employing at Community Link in looking at channeling as much as of our resources to moving people into housing quicker, and then working with them on the issues that that make them homeless. And fortunately for us, we've been able to receive some HUD funding each year that provides us with the ability to subsidize rents for up to 24 months, which help us close the gap between the affordability, 30% of gross income, and the cost of that housing unit for that family, while we help them get over the barriers and get to the point where they can afford it themselves.
Floyd Davis is president and CEO of an organization called Community Link. It's a nonprofit here in the Charlotte area. And we're going to continue our conversation with him and Henry Cisneros, who's the former director of the Housing and Urban Development and now the chairman of City View, which is an organization I also want to talk about this hour. And Alan Adler is with us. He's the producer of the Community Link Signature Breakfast, which is next Friday. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. From accounting services to web marketing, WFAE listeners make smart decisions for their businesses. Make a smart decision for your business by becoming a WFAE program sponsor. Information is available online at WFAE.org. And one of those organizations that has benefited from this is CESI Land Development, currently supporting the development of the North Carolina Music Factory, part of Uptown Village in Charlotte. Details at CESILDS.com. Well, she was supposed to be with us back in April, but a scheduling conflict prevented that from happening. She will join us, however, on Monday at 9. Who am I talking about? Rose Rock, the mother of probably the most successful comedian in the country, Chris Rock, who has a TV show about his childhood, but she has a book that tells the real story called Mama Rock's Rules, and she will join us Monday at 9.
The Friday News Roundup, a big win in North Carolina and a strong showing in Indiana moves Barack Obama closer to the Democratic presidential nomination. Senator McCain says he'll appoint conservative judges, and Congress considers another spending bill for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. the Diane Rehm Show Friday.
On 90.7 WFAE.
As gas and grocery prices soar across the Carolinas and the housing market continues to struggle, WFAE News will take a close-up look at how the current economy is impacting people here in the Charlotte region.
What is a big concern to me is whether or not consumers will drop out of the marketplace, because that is the telling as to whether or not this economy can sustain or whether it will go into a recession.
Listen for Faces of the Charlotte Economy beginning May 14th during Morning Edition on WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, joining us from the studios of Texas Public Radio. Henry Cisneros, former director of HUD and chairman of City View, an organization that helps developers and builders not only find financing, but also participates in site selection, et cetera, with regard to affordable housing. Floyd Davis is the president and CEO of Community Link, which is an organization in this region who functions similarly in terms of helping people find housing. And Alan Adler is with us. He is the producer of the Community Link Signature Breakfast, which is next Friday, at which Mr. Cisneros will be speaking. And you wanted to bring up the fact that this is not, Community Link is not just a City of Charlotte organization.
No, this Community Link serves what is referred to as the Charlotte Economic Development Region, mm-hmm. which includes 12 counties in North Carolina and 4 in South Carolina. And we have 3 offices currently serving this area with more to come.
So it's a regional effort.
Yes, it is.
In a big way.
Let
me talk to Mr. Cisneros for a second about his personal interest in this. I know that you were the mayor of San Antonio, and you did a lot of, you're known for doing a lot to help development in San Antonio during your 4 terms as mayor there. You were housing and urban development secretary, obviously, and you helped target this issue while you were there. But then you went on to Univision and ran, I think, the largest Spanish language network in the Americas, and have come back to this. Why? What's your personal attraction to this issue?
Well, Mike, let me say, first of all, that I'm a big fan of Charlotte, and I'm looking forward to being there next week. Our cities, San Antonio and Charlotte, or in the same, you know, kind of size category in the country, we're not the big regional world-class cities of New York or San Francisco or Chicago in the country, Miami. We're in a second tier, probably, although I think Charlotte is solidified into a bona fide national financial center. San Antonio has grown in its own right as a biosciences center, as a touristic center, and, you know, we compete in basketball. We competed for an NFL team, which Charlotte got, and we did not. And so,
Did you want one?
I'm a student of American cities, and Charlotte is one of the great examples of urban progress over the last several decades. Magnificent business community, leadership community. Looking forward to visiting with folks. Good place to live. Good place to raise a family. Obviously, we all have problems of one sort or another, and the housing issues are a challenge in Charlotte. But Charlotte, I think, has better handle and better leadership, like Community Link, than a lot of other places. So let me just begin by saying, as I study American cities, Charlotte is one of the treasures, one of the jewels, and you should be proud of that. What I enjoyed most about being mayor was, and I did that for 8 years, was watching projects come out of the ground and serve people's lives. And then at HUD, that was when I was Secretary of Housing, that instinct, and the president asked me to be the outreach to the nation's cities and mayors. So I traveled to 200 different American cities working personally in many of those places on public housing and homelessness and home ownership. What became clear to me was that it wasn't good enough just to see projects come out of the ground, change the city skyline, create a sense of progress, but real progress was watching families move into their homes. And I acquired a kind of almost transcendental sense of what it means, what a home means for families. I mean, this became very clear to me in some of the disasters we had to oversee, like the Northridge earthquake in Los Angeles, Hurricane Andrew. It became very clear to me when I worked in poor places like central cities and Native American reservations and Native Eskimo reservations, and saw what it means to move into a safe and decent home. And I decided, for the long haul, that's what I want to do. So I created a company that today is aggregating very large sums of institutional capital. By that I mean pension systems and retirement systems around the country that have traditionally invested in real estate to make money for their pensioners, but they've invested in hotels or industrial space or high-rise condominiums, office towers. But now they're increasingly recognizing they can make a return for their pensioners and address a pressing societal need in the form of homes for working families.
We
put capital into that, and as you say, we're doing about 37 projects right now, 7,000 homes across the country. It is not classically affordable the way I described it earlier, 80% of median and below, because you generally cannot do that in the market. That requires subsidy. What we do is the middle band of what we call workforce housing, from 80% of median to about 150% of median. That's where we operate. And in fact, we're building in North Carolina now.
And as I understand, that's okay. As I understand it, these investors who invest in what you do mm-hmm. are willing right. to take a lower rate of return. Is that correct?
Well, in our main company, in what we call in CityView, that is a purely market proposition, and the investors, because they're pension systems and they have actuarial obligations, will not accept a lower than market return.
No.
So that's why we are in the workforce band there.
Okay.
All right. We also have a nonprofit we call American Sunrise, and its purpose is to raise capital from sources like church-related groups, foundations that will accept what they call program-related investment, which can be several points lower than market, banks that have CRA obligations. There we are trying to amass capital below targeted returns so that we can do bona fide affordable. Mm-hmm. And there we can mix it with city money, federal money, and others in order to get as low in price to the homeowner as possible. So that's the two entities that I straddle today, is the for-profit CityView and the nonprofit American Sunrise.
You've also written about this topic of affordable housing, excuse me, most recently with former Secretary Jack Kemp, who is a Republican. Yeah. The book is called Our Communities, Our Homes, Pathways to Housing and Home Ownership in America's Cities and States. And I'm just curious, what's in the book about affordable housing that a Democrat and a Republican can agree on?
Well, Jack Kemp and I are buddies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he preceded me as Secretary of Housing. And what I decided to do was, instead of try to undercut what he had done and start over, I tried to build on some of the things that he had done, because he'd done a good job of squeezing out some of the corruption in old programs and starting some ideas about reforming public housing. So he appreciated that, and we've stayed friends over the years. And as you know, Jack Kemp is not your ordinary rightist thinker, you know, right. conservative thinker. He's a very open guy, particularly on matters of race and poverty, always has been. That was his reputation from when I first started hearing about him in the 1970s. Former pro football player, always had a real kind of sense of interracial America, and he was a good HUD secretary. So we agree on a lot of things. This book that we did is our second book together. Hmm. The first one postulated the worth of bipartisanship in housing strategy for the country, how the country's always done best in housing when it was bipartisan. And in fact, in the 1950s, the person who had the title in America, Mr. Housing, was Senator Robert Taft of Ohio, a renowned Republican. And we saw great progress under President Truman, a Democrat, under President Johnson, a Democrat. So it's been bipartisan at many points. The second book didn't speak so much to national policy, but tried to focus on what would housing policy look like at the local level if there was really good organization. So we looked at the best of the best and walked along a continuum that begins with housing for the homeless, supportive housing, public housing, subsidized rentals, entry-level home ownership, market rentals, entry-level home ownership, and then the traditional American move-up house. So seven steps along that continuum, and tried to sort of figure who in America is doing the best job at each of these points, and what does the rest of the country, what do other municipalities and leaders at the local level have to learn from that? That's the topic of the book.
What drives the shortage, and I don't know who to ask this question to, but what drives the shortage of affordable housing, or I'm not sure whether to call it workforce housing, to use your term, or affordable housing,
around the country and in this area
as well?
It's two different things, and I'll defer to Floyd and Alan, but let me just take 30 seconds here. It's two different things. Affordable is generally below that what the family earning the 80% of area median income can afford, below 80, and then sort of 80 to 150 is called workforce, and that's the traditional sort of middle class, firemen, policemen, teachers, nurses, you know, middle class professional workers in that middle band. What drives the shortage? Principally, the lack of supply in this arena.
Meaning people aren't building it or offering it as rental property? Is that what you're saying?
Meaning both. Okay. But meaning that there are barriers in the cost structure of land and construction. There are impediments in the form of NIMBYism, not in my backyard, opposition to new housing. There is the difficulty of finding assemblable land in urban areas where people live. So all the affordable housing has to be in new suburbs, you know, 15, 20 miles away, and that just adds to the congestion and the need for additional roads and the expenditure of gasoline and transportation costs, et cetera. And then finally, there is the fact that builders say, I mean, I hear this all the time. Builders say, look, if I'm going to go through the brain damage of getting land assembled and permitting, I just as soon build upscale as build for working families, because it's so hard to do. I may as well get the last dollar that I can from this. So even noble, well-intentioned builders who start out to build, you know, at workforce prices end up going upscale and selling $350,000, $400,000 homes or more because it's so hard to do, and the supply is short, they can get it.
So during all of those comments, Mr. Davis was sitting here nodding in recognition and agreement, because obviously both of you are on the same page here.
And one additional comment I would add, and what we see here locally in our area, one of the biggest developers of affordable housing is the Housing Partnership, formerly Charlotte Mecklenburg Housing Partnership, a nonprofit developer that's building multifamily housing. Mm-hmm. And in partnership with the Charlotte Housing Authority and the Housing Trust Fund, et cetera.
Is that the key, these public-private partnerships, which also include non-governmental organizations getting involved in this to make it happen? Is that what the key is here?
I think that's one of the keys. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Is this a new concept, or has this been around for some time?
I think it's new in the scale that it is achieving. We have more and more people who are recognizing, look, I think this, what I'm about to say is an increasing recognition across the country. We are not going to produce affordable housing in the marketplace. There just isn't many ways that private builders can build, go through all of the entitlements and approvals and construction costs and land assembly, and then offer it at affordable, below 80% of median. So we need subsidy from local governments, hence the argument for comprehensive local strategies are by cities and counties, and some are doing a very good job. Mm-hmm. If you're interested, I'll share with you a couple of examples later. Then there is nonprofits who are producing, and they're getting increasingly sophisticated and going to scale. There are intermediaries like LISC and Enterprise and others who are entering this space. But the collaboration, what's called the layering of financing, is absolutely essential to producing affordable housing on any scale.
Mm-hmm. I know that CityView provides it's a for-profit real estate investment company which provides what is described as attractive project financing for experienced home builders and developers who demonstrate a commitment to quality. How does American Sunrise, which is the nonprofit, how does it work to encourage builders to get involved?
Okay, first of all, City View is, our largest investor is the California Public Employee Retirement System, which is a $240 billion pension system that has to meet its actuarial obligations to its beneficiaries, so it has to generate a return. And it tells us what the return they seek is, and that stipulates what kinds of projects we can do, even though our mission is to be in the workforce space. So it's a very tight fit. It is threading the needle between, on the one hand, keeping the prices workforce priced, and on the other, getting the returns for the pensioners. And so we have to pick land well. We have to pick projects well. We have to work with the best builders who produce on budget. And we try to bring in, if not the entire project at workforce prices, then a substantial part of it. We're building a project right now in downtown Raleigh, four blocks from the Capitol, which it meets that test of about a third workforce and then sort of upscale condos in downtown Raleigh from that. Now, American Sunrise, by contrast, works with the same kind of builders. But because it is a nonprofit and it can bring lower price capital, and it can, because it is a nonprofit, work with governments to bring public subsidy to projects, it has a better chance of producing units that are truly affordable. That is our goal. And what we're finding is, in a lot of communities, there is a kind of an expectation, if you will, a quid pro quo even, that the builder is required to produce a certain number of units of truly affordable in the mix of a larger project. Even in communities that don't have, quote, inclusionary zoning, which is a mandate that 20% be affordable or 30% be affordable or 15% be affordable. Even in communities that don't have an inclusionary mandate, there's an increasing sense on the part of local government that they would like to make sure that working families and families who need affordable can fit into the mix. And that's what we're targeting.
I have about a minute left here, and perhaps it's an unfair question to ask at this juncture because of the time constraints, but part of the problem of getting people into affordable housing, and we've noticed this, is that getting financing for them is difficult, and a lot of people got into homes and into loans recently that they could not afford because of various things. One of the companies that your company partnered with for financing was Washington Mutual, which has been deeply affected by the subprime mortgage lending fiasco, and you're on the board, I believe, of Countrywide Financial, another company that's been involved in this subprime lending crisis. Talk to me about this in 30 seconds or less, about how this has affected
well,
you.
And
we can come back and finish it up if you'd like to.
Yeah. It's no question but that the ability to get people into homes qualified for mortgages has gotten more difficult since the fall when this global credit crunch began. I am no longer on the board of Countrywide. I was for several years, but I have to give my attention to producing homes and was not able to, you know, deal with the troubles that company was confronting. But I'll be more than happy to talk more, if time allows, about how we work our way through this present housing crisis.
Okay, we'll come back. We'll do that with Henry Cisneros, former director of HUD, chairman of CityView, Floyd Davis, president and CEO of Community Link on Charlotte Talks. Our program is made possible in part today by Home Instead Senior Care of Charlotte, introducing the 40-70 Rule, a guide to conversation starters for boomers and their aging parents. Details at homeinsteadcharlotte.com or 704-344-0801. And by the Carolina Clay Matters Pottery Guild, with pottery by more than 45 local and regional artisans, Saturday, May 10th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the McAlpine Barn, CarolinaClayMatters.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, it's part one of the weekly news roundup. The National Hour is first with Dora McManus, Washington Bureau Chief of the LA Times, Catty Kay, Washington correspondent with the BBC, and Roger Simon, Chief Political Columnist of the Politico. Obviously, they'll be talking about Barack Obama versus Hillary Clinton and where that stands in terms of the Democratic presidential nomination, and Senator John McCain saying that he will appoint conservative judges and more. Then in the second hour, it's the International Hour, and they'll take a look at some of the leading stories in the news this week, including the cyclone that killed hundreds of thousands, it seems, in Burma, and Vladimir Putin, who moves from president to prime minister of Russia without seemingly giving up any power at all. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. 800-603-WFAE. Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org or WFAE.org Charlotte Blogs.
He may be out of the presidential race, but John Edwards is still campaigning.
I think there's a great possibility of both cutting poverty in half in the next 10 years, and I stand by my commitment to end poverty, effectively end poverty in the next 30 years.
Former Senator John Edwards talks about the launch of his anti-poverty initiative and the presidential race later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE, your NPR news source.
Richard Holworth opened Square Books in 1979. Since then, his little bookstore in Oxford, Mississippi, has launched literary careers and resurrected some others. But Holworth just wants to make sure he's keeping the locals happy.
If you're not happy with the service in this store, you can come in and bang your shoe on the counter, and I'm going to hear about it.
A visit to Square Books next time on Bob Edwards Weekend from PRI. Sundays from 2 to 4 p.m. on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Henry Cisneros is with us from the studio in Texas. He's the former HUD secretary under the Clinton administration, chairman of CityView, a new organization, and also of American Sunrise Communities, a nonprofit that builds affordable housing. He's going to be coming to town next Friday for the Community Link Signature Breakfast. Floyd Davis is with us. He's the president and CEO of that organization, and Alan Adler is the producer of the breakfast. Did you have to twist Henry Cisneros' arm to make him come next Friday?
Not much. Not much.
No, I told you I'm a fan of Charlotte. And one other person who weighed in besides Floyd and Alan was then Councilwoman Burgess, who I understand is now mayor, is that correct?
Mayor pro tem.
Don't push
mayor
it.
Pro mayor pro tem. Got it. Okay. All right. I don't want to wade into local politics.
Well, it depends on what happens, I suppose, with the gubernatorial election, because Mayor McCrory is. And it just so happens, Susan Burgess has called in, and I'm going to punch the button here. Susan,
well,
welcome.
And we didn't set that up.
No, we didn't. Welcome, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's great to have you, and it's wonderful to have Henry give us such great compliments in Charlotte. I do want to brag a little bit on Community Link, because they've been a tremendous partner for the city and not only earned income tax credit assistance, but counseling, pre-mortgage counseling. Their clients have had zero foreclosures, so they're a real important partner, a great asset to our community. But I want to talk a little bit about our housing trust fund that we've been able in the city to partner with our private developers, the Housing Partnership and Housing Authority and so forth. We produced 1,640 units last year of affordable housing, and we're targeting under 30% of area mean income, and we're very proud of that. However, our housing trust fund needs to be replenished, and there'll be a bond referendum this fall in November, so that people in Charlotte, I hope, will support us once again to give us that resource so that we can continue to provide housing for our workforce and below to keep everybody in our city.
As long as I have you on the phone, let me just ask a political question here. If Pat McCrory becomes the governor, do you automatically become the mayor?
No, sir. Oh. I would become acting mayor between the time that that he would leave and we would appoint a replacement. The council is required, because he's a Republican, to appoint a Republican. And it has been our practice to appoint any replacement to a person who pledges not to run in the next election. So no one is given that advantage. But no, there's not that succession. But, of course, I'm a Beverly Perdue supporter and have been for many years. And so we'll just see what happens in November.
Well, now you've opened an equal time can of worms for us.
Sorry,
thank you.
But you brought it up.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate it.
You bet.
And thank you for calling. Go ahead.
I know that Susan doesn't meet the Republican test, because I met her at the National League of Cities, where she is an official of the Association of Local Officials across the country who are Democrats. And so she's well known across America as a spokesperson for cities and for housing, which is how I met her, and the conversation began that results in my coming next week.
Ah, okay. Well, Susan, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks. thank you, and thanks so much, Henry, for visiting our city. And
look forward to seeing you, Susan. Thanks for your intervention and for your great work. The housing trust funds are an important vehicle to create new sources of revenue, new streams of revenues to be applied to housing, and few cities have figured it out. I'm really complimentary of you that Charlotte has done that. Congratulations. You're in the pioneering. You're in the lead in creating new ways to build affordable housing.
Wow. Okay. Thank you very much for your call, Susan. Let me go to Thomas in Charlotte. Thank you for being with us. Welcome.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
My question is not really directed to the national speaker, because this is primarily a local problem. So this is really towards Mr. Davis. I've noticed that the public housing communities are being grazed and leveled and turning into mixed-use housing. The people living in those units are now being spread into established neighborhoods, older neighborhoods in Charlotte. But when these people get into these neighborhoods, they have no idea what it is to be a homeowner or to be a neighbor. So there's a lot of behavior going on in these older neighborhoods that need to be corrected.
Behavior meaning?
Parking on front lawns, not making the landlord aware of deteriorating housing stock.
Okay. This is not, I would take it, not something that you're really involved in.
No, this is not something I'm involved in. This is really the Charlotte Housing Authority. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the demolishing and the raising of the former housing communities like Piedmont Courts and so forth, mm-hmm. those individuals are offered the opportunity to receive a Section 8 voucher, which gives that family the opportunity to move and live in other areas of the city of their choosing. Mm-hmm. And also, the housing authority then is required to inspect those properties and make sure that they meet HUD guidelines as safety and affordable housing. And, and then those vouchers are used to assist those families. And then, as you probably remember with the Hope 6 project with formerly Piedmont Courts and now, Siegel Point, mm-hmm. 20 of those units in Siegel Point that are being developed are set aside for people who were former Piedmont Courts residents or former public housing residents to be able to return to that site, just as was done in First Ward and Arbor Glen and other developments throughout the city.
Thomas, thank you for your call. But that is part of the problem, and part of, it's a perception problem, and there's a, and there is a, a reality to this perception in some cases.
Yeah.
And Henry Cisneros mentioned this a second ago with the NIMBY problem, not in my backyard, because there is a perception that when you either create a mixed-use development or you create affordable housing in an established area where there are other higher-priced homes, that with that will come this problem of parking on the front yard, of crime, of so many other things.
Well, if I may, the gentleman raises a concern that is valid and that is, frankly, being addressed across the country. But it is this. As we promoted a program called Hope 6, which came out of our watch in Washington to deal with the absolutely inhuman conditions in much of public housing. It's a lot worse in the north, by the way. The high rises in Chicago, in Newark, in Pittsburgh, in Philadelphia were awful places for people to live. As bad as public housing might have been in Charlotte and Atlanta and other southern cities, it didn't have the same high-rise character of just putting all the poor people in one place. Mm-hmm. But the program was a national program, and we ended up taking out public housing, demolishing what was there, and putting mixed-income housing in. Now, when you put mixed into a site, that means you probably haven't replaced the same number of units that were public housing. 30% of median and below, very poor. So that meant that we gave vouchers, as Floyd said, and allowed people to move into other places. Now, the gentleman makes a correct point. Many times the people who went on vouchers and took apartments or took duplexes or rented homes didn't have the preparation to be on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They had been in public housing. They just didn't know all the dimensions of living in a home and so forth. And so there are problems. So one answer is to bundle the vouchers with housing counseling and job counseling and school-related assistance and so forth, so that families really do get a leg up on moving into the mainstream of society,
that's
integrating into our economy. And so we referred to it as vouchers on steroids.
That's part of what Community Link does.
Right.
For people,
as a matter of fact, a part of our program is called supportive housing. And when we place families in rental housing, we provide supportive services to teach them how to be good tenants. And teach them their responsibilities as tenants.
Mm-hmm.
So we just don't place them in housing and walk away from them. But we want to stay with them and make sure that they are successful and also that it works for both parties, the tenant and the landlord.
There's this looming black cloud over the whole country because of this subprime lending thing and all the foreclosures that have resulted from it and predatory loans that people got into knowingly and unknowingly in some cases, where they are losing their homes because they simply can't afford to pay for it. And a lot of people now are fearful of becoming a first-time buyer, it would seem to me, because they're afraid that they will fall into that same trap. But you say that they shouldn't be worried about this.
They shouldn't be worried about it. They should go to an approved HUD Home Ownership Education and Counseling Program, which is one of the things we do at Community Link. And we help people, prepare people to become homeowners. And we teach them, in addition to getting them mortgage ready, mm-hmm. we also teach them about the home buying process and making sure that they understand it and that they have representation through the process.
Who should come to you? Because it just seems strikes me that there are some people who would feel funny about coming to a Community Link type organization for this kind of counseling. Should they feel badly about coming to
Absolutely
you?
Not.
Okay.
Everyone who is considering buying a home for the first time should seek out a home ownership education and counseling program. And we offer it, we have a class every Monday night at our facility in Uptown Charlotte. Mm-hmm. in a very safe location, and
free parking
and great surroundings. And they come to that seminar and that begins the process. And from that, they go through our counseling process and then our classes. And then they are prepared to enter into, the process.
How many people come every Monday night?
We're having between 18 to 25 people show up every Monday night now. Hmm. 18 to 25 new people coming into our program.
I'd like to help put this into perspective. Since 2004, Community Link has served close to 23,000 men, women, and children with services like the Home Ownership Education and Counseling Program.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but it seems to me that a lot of people would have benefited from this kind of counseling before they got into homes that have been now foreclosed upon. Do you know what the kind of success rate that you folks have in terms of keeping in terms of educating people to the point where they're comfortable and they make good decisions and they don't lose their homes?
We've had tremendous success. Again, using 2004 as a benchmark, we've placed almost 800 families into first-time homes with negligible or even close to zero foreclosure rates that we're aware of that mm-hmm. have been reported to mm-hmm. us. And in our supportive housing efforts, less than 5% have been evicted in the first year.
What's the biggest problem, stumbling block for many first-time buyers who then find themselves way over their heads? What didn't they know that they should have known that they could have known if they came to you in the first place?
Well, many people mistakenly think when they go into a sales office,
a real estate
sales office at a development, that salesperson is looking out for their interest. When in the reality, that person is working for the seller, okay? And also, the way the real estate transaction is structured in this country, everyone involved, the realtor, the mortgage loan officer, and so forth, are compensated based upon the sales price of the unit. And so one of the things we emphasize with our customers is helping them understand how much house they can afford. before they enter into the process. And secondly, the type of financing package that they can afford. And that's a 30-year fix, because the people we work with, in most cases, their income is not going to significantly increase. And if they're in a 30-year fixed product, then their mortgage interest and principal will not increase. And the only increase is taxes and insurance.
And as I understand, most of the people who have lost their homes in this subprime situation are because they signed these variable rates that skyrocketed in the second, third, or fifth year.
Yeah, and you know, it's human nature for people to believe that they're going to be able to afford it later. Something good will happen. They'll get a promotion. They'll get an increase in their salary.
In fact, in many cases, your real estate agent will say, you know, in 5 years, you'll be making more money.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's human nature to believe that. I mean, it's the height of optimism. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, as Floyd said, for many people, things just don't change enough to match the explosion of interest rates
that
happened under these adjustable rates.
We've found almost consistently that most first-time homeowners don't know the questions they need to ask before making that level of a commitment. And we can provide the answers and the questions and the answers.
Uh-huh. But I think that Floyd is also correct in saying people should not be overly anxious about the process of eventually becoming a homeowner. There are steps that you go through that are responsible. But the payoff is so large long run in terms of movement into the middle class, the savings that effectively an equity represents, the ability to transform equity into eventually a college loan or a small business loan later in a career or retraining opportunity. I mean, the truth of the matter is home ownership is such a virtue in our society. It is the path to the middle class.
And it reduces crime because it creates stakeholders in the community.
Stability in the communities.
I have 45 seconds left. Alan, you're bringing Henry Cisneros to town next Friday for this breakfast.
At the Westin Hotel, we want to help build awareness. And we know that when CommunityLink succeeds, you win. And we want to broaden our involvement among the economic regions, most interested parties. So they should come to our breakfast, listen to Henry, learn about CommunityLink, and it's open to the public. They can just call 704-943-9506 to make a reservation. Reservations are required, and it's no ticket price to enter.
We'll put that on our website later today so people can make a note of it. Henry Cisneros, thank you for joining us from Texas.
Thank you, Mike, for your time and attention. Floyd, Alan, see you next week.
Thank you.
Forward to
Floyd Davis and Alan Aller with Community Link. Thank you all for being here.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our senior producer is Wendy Herkey. The associate producer is Tim Ross. Aaron Sutton is our research assistant, and our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, go to WFAE.org.
And our program is made possible in part today by the Blossom Shop, a locally owned and operated florist and flower shop. This Mother's Day, offering delivery of flowers, plants, and gifts. Locations Uptown, Myers Park, and Dilworth. The Blossom Shop, 704-376-3526. And by Mothering Across Continents, supporting orphans and vulnerable children in South Africa. Presenting the documentary Angels in the Dust, May 9th at Myers Park United Methodist Church, 704-376-8584.
My name is Avery Smith. I'm 27 and I listen to Morning Edition.
Morning Edition brings you stories from east to west, north to south, and around the globe.
NPR and Morning Edition is my first place to go to find out what's going on in the world. I guess I have a fascination with learning things.
Enrich your life with Morning Edition from NPR News.
With regional news, weather, and traffic, weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
I'm Mike Collins. He's one of the most successful comedians in the country. He also produces a successful sitcom based on his childhood. Now, Chris Rock's mother has written a book detailing her own thoughts on how she raised not only one successful child, but 10. Rose Rock joins us to talk about Mama Rock's rules and to shed some insight on her most famous funny child. She was supposed to join us weeks ago, but we promise she'll be here when Charlotte talks, Monday at 9 on 90.7. WFAE. Becoming mostly sunny as we go through the day. Highs in the lower 80s, around 60 tonight. Lower 80s again tomorrow with sunshine and showers, likely with the chance of a thunderstorm on Sunday. Right now it's 66 degrees at WFAE Charlotte, WFHE Hickory, your NPR news source.